It's Weekends and All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. Kwasi Kwarteng is in some ways a child of the British Empire. His parents were born in Ghana when it was subject to British rule. They eventually emigrated to London, where Kwasi was born. He eventually ended up at the finest boarding school, Eton College, and then to Cambridge, where he studied classics. Kwarteng worshipped Margaret Thatcher as a boy, and today he's one of just four Afro-British members of Parliament who's a conservative. Now, in another era, Kwasi Kwarteng may have been the ideal British civil servant sent to the colonies to administer the Queen's empire. But Kwarteng is also an historian and one who's just written a scathing critique of that vast enterprise. It's called Ghosts of Empire, and in it, he focuses on six places the British administered, all places still coping with the aftermath of British rule.
If you look at Nigeria, where we've had flare-ups of religious conflict, we've had suicide bombings, we've had lots of people being killed.
This is Muslim-Christian.
That's a Muslim-Christian thing. But if you look at the actual geography, if you look at the map of Nigeria, you'll see that the Muslim area is in the north and the Christian area is predominantly in the south. This is reflects almost a tribal basis, if you like. And these problems essentially stem from the fact that the country is an artificial country. In fact, the term Nigeria appeared in a Times op-ed piece in 1897. So these artificial boundaries essentially set up a very tense situation in which different ethnic groups, different tribes were forced to come together where they had no real shared culture.
And we face those consequences to this day.
Absolutely.
You point to Kashmir, for example.
Well, Kashmir is a fascinating instance where the Hindu royal family was sold Kashmir in 1846.
Even though the majority of the population was Muslim.
Exactly, because this man, a man called Gulab Singh, had managed to ingratiate himself with the British. He'd managed to do well in the Sikh Empire, which controlled Kashmir previously. And the British didn't really want to rule Kashmir directly at that time. So they sold it to him. As a consequence of that, his family ruled Kashmir for 100 years. But when it came to independence, the Maharaja had the sole choice, and he decided, as a Hindu, to go with India. And, of course, that had massive consequences, which we still feel today.
I'm interested in your relationship with the story you write about, because, of course, you are the child of immigrants, right?
That's right. Your
parents are from Ghana, and you, in some ways, are a product of some of these elite institutions that many
Absolutely.
Of these, right? You're an Oxbridge kid and
That's right.
Harvard Kennedy School, and now you're a member of Parliament representing the Conservative Party, the party that many, I guess, would associate with tradition, these kinds of people that you write about. And I'm curious to get a sense of how you came to the Conservative Party.
I've really been drawn to the Conservative Party largely through Margaret Thatcher, the inspiration of Margaret Thatcher. And my conservatism is very much, if you like, an economic conservatism. I'm very much interested in free trade, in commerce, in wealth creation. In terms of empire, I think, if you look at the Conservatives' relationship to empire, yes, it is true. My family were probably victims, if you like, of a lot of the imperial tradition. But, you know, we've moved a long time, I think, from that time.
Did you grow up, when you were growing up, did your folks talk about how their worldview and the world in which they inhabited was shaped for good or ill by empire?
Yes, I think they did. My parents were born in the early 40s, so that's a very important date because when Ghana, which was then called the Gold Coast, when it became independent in 1957, my parents were just finishing their high school. So that was a very formative age in which they were taught very largely by British teachers. And then as they left high school in the late 50s, the schools they attended became more Ghanaian in influence. So they were there right at the cusp. So obviously that shaped their views. And I heard a lot of stories about the old colonial times. I mean, my father remembers listening to the London Olympics in 1948 in his village on the radio. These kinds of memories were part of my experience growing up.
Those are complex memories, though, right? I mean, I've experienced this as well as an overseas correspondent where you meet people who remember empire and they remember things about it fondly, like your description of your father listening to the BBC. It's not just black and white.
It's not exactly. I mean, this is what I'm trying to say is that yes, there was a lot of exploitation, but in a country like the Gold Coast, people often forget that there were very few colonial administrators. The British were trying to run, certainly after the war, the empire on the cheap. the hand of government, if you like, was quite light. So if you went to Accra, which is the capital, you might see a few British officials. But in the villages and the countryside, they were much rarer. So people very much got on with their lives, almost as if the British weren't there in some parts of the empire. Now, that doesn't say that it was a kind of land of milk and honey and they did not feel that there was an alien force, if you like, in their country. But it does mean that some of the memories are quite fond.
I'm speaking with Kwasi Kwarteng. He's a conservative member of the British Parliament and the author of a new book called Ghosts of Empire.
It's interesting because one of the main points you make is that democracy and the promotion of democracy cannot be exported. And you cite the example of Hong Kong, where you write about how this kind of parallel world of a British-style social hierarchy actually came about, not a liberal democracy. Can you describe
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Britain was in Hong Kong from 1841 to 1997. That's 156 years. During most of that time, the first 140 years, democracy was a sideshow. And in fact, one governor tried to bring in a little bit of democracy after the Second World War. That was completely overturned. That was not a path on which Hong Kong, as far as the British were concerned, should develop. And that's, I think, a very good example in which empire, while it could have imposed law and order, which it did in Hong Kong, was not about spreading democratic values. And in fact, I quote a civil servant in Burma. He said, "Forget all this rubbish about democracy. We're not trying to make the average Burman into a Brit. We're not trying to bring them political consciousness. We're simply trying to make sure they get a square meal and that there's some kind of law and order." And that was very much what I think the empire in reality was about.
What about, I guess you could call it the Monty Python argument, right? The famous scene where it says, "What have the Romans done for us?" You know, roads, bridges, wine, so on. I mean, that's an argument that people like Neil Ferguson and others who say, you know, there are things about empire that gave us the world we live in today, and we should be grateful for that. What about that argument about infrastructure, about roads, about order?
Obviously. I mean, that's one of the points I make. I mean, I say that there was a degree of order, and yes, there was quite a bit of infrastructure development. What I'm arguing against is this idea that you could export some sort of political idea of democracy.
It seems to me that when you were writing this book, you had another empire in mind, and that is the so-called American empire. I mean, do you think that in some ways the United States and the way it operates overseas has learned lessons from the UK or has in some ways ignored them?
I think a bit of both. I think actually, sure, when I started writing the book, I was very much living under the influence of current events. The Iraq War, which started in 2003, had happened. We're still living with the consequences of that. And the whole notion of neoconservative ideas of exporting American values, that was on the political agenda. And my book was very much, if you like, a response to that. And I think given the drift of American policy in the last 2 or 3 years, certainly with the election of Obama, I think the Americans are now much less inclined to try and export their values in that aggressive way.
That's Kwasi Kwarteng. He's a historian and a conservative member of the British Parliament. His new book is called Ghosts of Empire. It's out now. Kwasi Kwarteng, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.